bien hoy.
Thank you very much for allowing GPME to present today. But I must say that GPME are a bit, or we are a bit disappointed that we thought that the minister would be here today. But I've received the apology. And we are the minister, so the current way we don't have the meeting to make able to be here themselves. Tell us what is going to happen moving forward. But if we that as it may, unfortunately, today, last time when we scheduled this meeting, there was enough time because we had the whole day. Which means now we have come to 1 o'clock, or with the grace of a few minutes after one. So, our understanding, correct, is that. The report is saying that the strategic plan, which is a plan, which of course is supposed to be there over 5 years, and well, that makes our work a bit easy because we have to deal only with the annual performance plan. Well, I would like to take this opportunity to welcome you, Jindy, and the team, and we are in your hands. We are inviting your address. Toma?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members. I'd like to start, Chairperson, with your permission by introducing the team from DVME. My name is Sean Phillips. I'm the DG of the department. On my left is Clement Madali, who's the head of the Office of the Director General. On my right is Peter Pretorius, who's the Chief Financial Officer of the department. To his right is Carjol Sutu. She is the head of Human Resource Management and Development of the department. To her right is Nompulo Nyeswa. She is the head of our Information Technology section. Also is Batiswa here. Batiswa has just gone out. Batiswa Mabane is the parliamentary officer of the department. Is Emmanuel? Emmanuel is here. He's a new face, I think, for the committee. He's the director for Parliament in the Office of the Minister. And Caroline has just gone up. Caroline Mangwani, she's my PA. And Bonnie Ramaila, she's the director for Communications in the Office of the DG.
I
Thank you very much. The presentation starts with a bit of background. Just to recap, during 2010-2011, there was a PME unit which was part of the presidency as a department and part of the presidency both. And then during for the 11-12 financial year, GPME started to have its own budgets with its own votes, and its focus widened to include monitoring of the implementation of the delivery agreements, management performance assessments of national provincial departments, evaluation, frontline service delivery monitoring, presidential hotline and citizen-based monitoring.
did submit a revised strategic plan last year because we had some substantial changes to our mandates from cabinet, from the president. In particular, we had the president's hotline, which was in the presidency, was transferred to DPME, and also we had a new particular strong focus on evaluations. In that cabinet had approved national evaluation policy framework in November 2011. So because there were substantial changes to our mandate during that period, we therefore submitted a revised strategic plan. But since then there haven't been any substantial changes to our mandate, so we haven't submitted a revised strategic plan again this financial year, and we've just submitted our annual performance plan. This slide provides an overview of the various programs of the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. Since we were created in 2010, we focused on four different dimensions or levels of monitoring and evaluation in governance. Firstly, at the top of the diagram or the table, we've focused on monitoring and evaluation of progress with the national priorities of governance. In particular, the 12 priority outcomes. Members will recall that we went through a process where we, firstly, the President entered into performance agreements with each of his ministers, in which he spelled out at a high level targets for various indicators for the key outcomes, and asked certain ministers to coordinate the development of delivery agreements with other ministers and the different spheres of government for the achievement of those targets, those indicators in the priority areas. The delivery agreements were all finalized by about November 2010, and since then we've been focusing on monitoring the implementation of the delivery agreements. Cabinet receives quarterly progress reports on the delivery agreements from the coordinating ministers for the different outcomes, and we also provide Cabinet with quarterly reports on our view of progress against the delivery agreements. The progress is made public on the Programme of Action website, which is can be accessed through directly or through our website, the DPME website. In the last year or two, we've also focused on evaluations, and many of those evaluations that are now underway relate to key implementation programs related to the achievement of the priorities in the delivery agreements. Then we've also focused on monitoring the quality of management practices in individual departments at national, provincial level and in municipalities. The reason why we've taken a strategic decision to also put a lot of time into monitoring the quality of management practices is because of the findings from the 10 and 15 year reviews that while government since 1994 has been good at putting in place new policies, it hasn't been so good at implementation, and the key challenge is implementation. And implementation is about converting inputs into outputs, which involves the use of generic management practices such as project management, supply chain management, human resource management, etc. So our second main area of focus has been on assessing the quality of management practices in individual departments. We've developed in consultation with other organizations at the Administrative Center of Government, particularly the National Treasury and the DPSA, and in consultation with independent bodies such as the Auditor General and the Public Service Commission, we've developed a set of good practice management standards. And we go through a process where we, together with offices of the Premier, facilitate self-assessments by departments of the quality of their management practices. And then from this year, we've also introduced moderation of those self-assessments. In this year now, in the 12-13 year, we've completed assessment of all 156 national and provincial departments, together with the offices of the Premier. They all did self-assessment of their management practices, and all of those self-assessments have been moderated. We're busy now currently discussing the moderated self-assessment results with individual departments. We will be taking the results to Cabinet
in June or July, and we'll then make the results public of these assessments of the quality of management practices. The aim of this, the main aim of this process is to try and get all the departments into a continuous improvement cycle. So we will be doing these assessments of management practices on an annual basis, and the aim is to, from the benchmark that we're establishing now, to see improvements over time in the quality of management practices. And with the intention of, as a result of that, seeing improvements in performance of government and improvements in the quality of service delivery. Because we think that in certain areas, for example, supply chain management, if we can improve the quality of supply chain management practices in government, we think that that will result in improvements in service delivery. It will result in increased value for money and reduced corruption and improved management of service providers. Then the third level of dimension, main level or dimension of our monitoring and evaluation work is monitoring of frontline service delivery. And here again we put in place a program which we are implementing together with the Office of the Premier again, where we do unannounced visits using our own staff and staff at the Office of the Premier to service delivery sites. During the 12-13 financial year, we visited about, I don't remember the exact figure, but somewhere between 200 and 250 sites. Again, the main aim of this program is to stimulate improvements in the quality of frontline service delivery. Where we find particularly problematic service delivery sites, we engage with the relevant departments at various levels, at local level, at provincial level, and at national level, and encourage them to put in place improvement plans, and then we revisit the particularly problematic site to check whether or not the improvement plans have been implemented. In this part of our work, we also include the presidential hotline, which is steadily improving. We are now at about a 90% responsiveness rate to issues raised by citizens on the presidential hotline, and we are working closely with the departments and provinces who in turn work with municipalities to resolve the remaining outstanding presidential hotline cases. A relatively new initiative, which we talked about in our revised strategic plan, is a program of citizen-based monitoring, which is also focused on monitoring the frontline service delivery, but it's not about us in the Office of the Premier doing unannounced visits to service delivery sites. It's about mobilizing local communities to enter into partnerships with the management of local frontline service delivery institutions to monitor the quality of service delivery in those institutions. We're starting off piloting this program with the South African Police Service and with the Department of Health. We referred so far with the SAPS. We will be identifying particular police stations with SAPS and then working with local management for them to establish relationships to have structured monitoring of the quality of service delivery in that police station by community-based organizations. With the aim of using that monitoring to result in improvements in the quality of the frontline service delivery. Then finally, Chairperson, we have a role as the custodians of monitoring and evaluation function across government. Just like National Treasury is the custodian of financial management in governments, and DPSA is the custodian of human resource management, we're the custodians of monitoring and evaluation in government. And in that regard, we have various roles to play. As described in the APD, we're involved in a number of capacity-building initiatives for monitoring and evaluation across governments, with the aim of getting departments themselves to improve their own internal monitoring and evaluation. We're involved in training initiatives. We've also produced quite a number of guidelines on our website, similarly to the way in which National Treasury puts guidelines on its website, which departments use for financial management. And part of our role as a custodian of M&E across government is one of the things that we've done is to put in place a national evaluation system. Cabinet approved a policy framework for the national evaluation system in 2011, which we developed. And in terms of that system, we now have a system working where we have annual and three-year national evaluation plans, and we're starting now to have provincial evaluation plans as well, where national cabinet and the provincial executive councils agree on priority programs for evaluation. evaluations being different to monitoring in that they involve in-depth analysis of programs in order to assess whether or not they're having the intended impact, and assessment of ways in which the design or implementation of the programs can be improved so that they have more impact. As a department, we have four main programs, which are listed here. These are our main budget programs in terms of our budget structure. As a new department, we've also been fortunate that we've been able to structure our budget programs so that they're very much aligned to the work of the department as well. So we have, as with all departments, program one is administration. Program two is outcomes monitoring and evaluation. Within program two, we focus on, if I go to the previous slide, we focus on the M&E of national priorities and evaluations. In program three, M&E systems coordination and support, that is the main program for in which we have played a custodianship role for M&E. And then in program three, M&E system coordination support, program four, public sector oversight, that is the main program where we do the management performance monitoring of the quality of management practices, and monitoring of frontline service delivery. Just while I remember, Chairperson, we recently, over the last year, we have extended this monitoring of the quality of management practices of national and provincial departments to municipalities as well. We have now developed a tool in consultation with the Department of Cooperative Governance for similar assessments of the quality of management practices and the quality of service delivery in municipalities, and we're starting to apply that tool now in a set of pilot municipalities. And we intend to reach a stage where we are assessing substantial numbers of municipalities on an annual basis. Chairperson, I'd like to now move to cover just some highlights. I don't want to go through every page of the APP, which is quite long, and there are a lot of outputs and performance indicators and targets in the APP. What I'm rather going to do is just provide some of the highlights of some of the key outputs, targets, and indicators from the APP. In Program 1, which is related to our own internal administration as a department, we have a service delivery improvement plan in place, and we've set ourselves a target of identifying all and every weakness identified through audit findings and through our own management performance assessment of ourselves, with the intended outcome of having a clean audit report as a department. Last year we obtained an unqualified audit report. We're not sure what the result will be for this financial year, which has just finished. It would be either unqualified or clean. In this APP, we've set ourselves targets of having clean audit reports. And in that regard, we pay particular focus on improving the quality of the performance information in this APP, making sure that it's smart. We've also set ourselves a target of developing guidelines for the rest of government as part of our M&E custodianship role on how departments should go about, or certain principles that departments should adhere to when they put in place IT systems for monitoring and evaluation. So these will be simple yet practical guidelines which will focus particularly on M&E issues, because there are other organizations in government which are responsible for general IT guidelines. It's the DSA function, and CIPA is the agency which plays the key role in that regard, and DSA produces numerous guidelines with regard to IT systems and departments. What we want to do particularly is just put a guideline on IT from an M&E perspective, and things that departments should be careful about and aware of when they put in IT systems for M&E in particular. So we want to put in place some guidelines about the design, selection, and implementation of IT systems to support monitoring and evaluation business processes, and for example, we would want to guide departments that they must be careful that they try and choose IT systems that will allow and support interoperability between different systems, so that we can our and their jobs can be made easier if we can transfer data from one system to another. In program two, which focuses on the outcomes and evaluations, we will continue with our monitoring of the implementation of the delivery agreements, which is very important work, with the aim of constantly trying to find ways to better achieve the targets and the delivery agreements. We will continue with our to expand the evaluation program. We do have an approved annual and three-year national evaluation plan now, and two provinces have provincial evaluation plans in place, and we're working with the other provinces to have evaluation plans in all provinces. And we now have quite a large number of evaluations, between 20 and 30 evaluations, which are either in progress or in the preparatory stages. And all of these evaluations are being carried out together with other departments. This is critical because in our review of the international experience of evaluations, we found the most important lesson is that there must be ownership of the evaluation by the department who manages the program being evaluated. Otherwise, run a very big risk of the evaluation reports just going on, being put on the shelf and not being used. So we're being very careful to do all the evaluations as joint evaluations together with the relevant departments. We are also very busy together with the Secretariat for National Planning Commission on working on a 20-year review. And then another key task that we have for this financial year is to develop the medium-term strategic framework for the 2014-29 period, which we're also doing in collaboration with the Secretariat of the National Planning Commission. We have obtained Cabinet's approval to develop the MTSF as the first five-year building block for the National Development Plan. So during the course of this year, we'll be working very closely with other departments and other spheres of government to agree on the detailed content of the MTSF and to agree on very concrete targets and indicators for aspects of the National Development Plan which can be implemented in the first five-year period of 2014 to 2019. So we are going to produce the MTSF so it's somewhat different to previous medium-term strategic frameworks, so this will be more detailed and it will have much more concrete targeted indicators for specific key priority actions which are covered in the NDP. And it will comprehensively cover all the different themes or chapters of the NDP. We are intending to provide a first draft of the MTSF to the July government of Kotla and to have the MTSF ready for submission to a cabinet meeting as soon as possible after the 2014 elections so that the post-2014 administration can hit the ground running with a plan from as soon as possible after the elections. The other reason why we started work early on the MTSF is because we want to use the MTSF to achieve integration between the National Development Plan and the strategic plans of individual departments. As members are aware, departments will be working on their new five-year strategic plans towards the end of this year and in the early months of next year. So we would like to have a good draft MTSF ready so that can inform their work on their strategic plans so that there can be a very close correlation or line of sight between the NDP, the MTSF, and the strategic plans of individual departments. And in that way, we hope to ensure that there's strong implementation of the NDP as the key indicators and parts in the NDP will be cascaded through into the individual strategic plans of departments. And the new delivery agreements will then follow from the MTSF in 2014. As I've mentioned, honourable members, we also have a new initiative, and this is extended our monitoring of the management performance of national provincial departments and municipalities. So one of the key programs this year for our program two is monitoring of the performance of local governments. And we're currently in the pilot stage of applying the tool that we've developed in that regard. Another key priority, ongoing priority, is to improve the quality of the data which is used for
by departments for reporting on progress against delivery agreements, and will continue to convene data forum meetings with sector departments to work on improvement of the quality of the data. And evaluations is a major priority for us, both in terms of developing the national evaluation plan, working with departments and implementing them, and building the capacity of departments to be able to do good evaluations. In Program 3, priorities include assessing the levels of capacity for M&E in national and provincial departments, and then designing guidelines and capacity building programs to address the gaps identified in the capacity of departments. We have an ongoing project which is the development indicators. The 2012 development indicators are being presented to Cabinet today, and they will be released shortly, and we will start in the process to develop the 2013 development indicators. The 2012 development indicators will be released soon, and then we work for throughout the year to reduce today is. And then we'll start on the 2013 development indicators. In Program 4, we will continue with our management performance assessment program. As I mentioned, our objective with this program is to do annual assessments of the quality of management practices in departments, to monitor this on an annual basis, to present the results to Cabinet and the Provincial Executive Council, and through that ongoing monitoring process, we aim to get departments into a continuous improvement cycle. We will also continue with our frontline service delivery monitoring program, and we have various targets in place for that. And as I mentioned earlier, we also have put in place targets for piloting citizen-based monitoring together with certain key service delivery departments. We have an ongoing program to improve the performance of the presidential hotline, and we set ourselves targets for that as well. Chairperson, to conclude, I'd just like to say a few things about our budget and our human resources. This slide shows our budget allocation of the NTF. We did, through the budgeting process, we did request an increased budget to the department, particularly to enable us to have a much larger program of monitoring of municipalities. We did get some increases, but not to the extent that we requested. As members will be aware, there is currently a rising budget deficit and ongoing global economic problems, and there are therefore fiscal constraints across governments, and Cabinet decided during 2012 that with few exceptions, departments' baseline MDF budgets would actually have to decrease by 1%, 2%, and 3%. What this means is that in our initial MTF allocation, we did obtain some increases, but then with the cost-cutting exercise, those increases were reduced a little by these 1%, 2%, and 3%. So overall, as you can see from the figures here, our budget is increasing slightly over the MTF, but not as much as it would have been if these expenditure control measures had not been put in place. In addition, in order to address the problem of that personnel expenditure is rising as a percentage of overall government expenditure, Cabinet also decided that there must be limits on increases in personnel budgets, which has resulted in all departments' personnel budgets being capped over the medium-term expenditure framework, so that you can't add any more money to personnel beyond the MTF baseline amounts for personnel indicated here. In terms of our personnel budget in particular, these are the budgets that are allocated and the numbers of funded posts of the MTF in the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. At the end of the last financial year, we had 197 funded posts, and by the end of the financial year, 173 of those were filled, In other words, we had a 12% funded vacancy rate at the end of the year. The reason why we still had a few vacancies at the end of the financial year were firstly due to normal staff turnover. In other words, some of those vacancies aren't new positions which hadn't yet been filled. They're due to some staff leaving the department or getting promotions to other departments. We didn't fill some of the positions as quickly as we would have liked to because the pre-employment screening process took a bit longer than expected. And we had to delay the filling of some of our levels 9, 10, 11, 12 posts while we were awaiting the DPSA directive on implementing the bargaining council resolution relating to clarification of putting officials on either salary level 9 or 10 or salary level 11 or 12. We also delayed the filling of three of our posts, our HCD assessment unit, as we were awaiting the approval of the new HCD assessment policy by the Minister of Public Service and Administration. That's for the 2012-2013 financial year. You can see from here that for the 13-14 financial year, we have 208 funded positions, which is an additional 11 positions over our 12-13 number of funded positions. The current situation is that of the existing vacant posts, all but two have already been advertised and are in various stages of being filled. And the remaining two are funded from December this year and will be advertised in July 2013. As we indicated in our APP, during the 2012 budgeting and planning cycle, we calculated that we would need to increase to 256 posts of the MTF, but due to the expenditure control measures decided upon by cabinets, we have only been able to find an increase in posts up to 214 posts of the MTF. The implications of this in terms of our performance and our work in particular is that we won't be able to carry out as many assessments of performance assessments of municipalities that we would have liked to, and we won't be able to manage as many evaluations as we would have liked to. Those are the key implications of us not getting as much money and being able to employ as many people as we would have liked to. With regards to our goods and services budget, these are the budgets over the MDF. The main expenditure items in goods and services are on professional services and computer services and travel and subsistence. Our government subsistence budget is fairly substantial, largely because of our frontline service delivery monitoring program. We have quite a lot of our officials traveling quite extensively around the country doing frontline service delivery monitoring visits together with officials from the Office of the Premier. With regard to professional services, the main items there are for service providers to do evaluations. The reason why we get service providers to do the evaluations is firstly that in terms of international good practice, evaluation should be carried out by independent parties rather than by internal staff. Secondly, that the evaluations are often very specific to a particular program. So, for example, we would do an evaluation of early childhood development. We require experts in early childhood development, and it wouldn't be efficient for us to hire on a permanent basis such experts in the departments. And the evaluations range across a wide variety of topics, which vary all the time. The second main area of our expenditure on professional services is on ME capacity building, and then we have quite a substantial budget for conducting surveys related to the capacity for ME within departments and also to pay training providers to build capacity for ME across governments. And then finally, we have our third most substantial budget here is for post-force internal audit expertise. And we have discussed this issue extensively with our audit committee in the department. We also raised the issue of whether or not it would not be more worthwhile for us to hire this internal audit expertise on a full-time basis within the department, and we did some calculations of it, which indicate that because we're a relatively small department, we don't require this level of expertise on a full-time basis. We're currently the cross-source internal audit expert are working for us for about 6 months of the year to do the necessary internal audits. We have a person to manage that function, but we wouldn't be, as a small department, we wouldn't be able to fully utilize high-level internal audit expertise on a full-time basis. We also have a full-time person managing risk. So we have two people in the full-time people department managing internal audits and managing risk. And then with regard to computer services, we have budgeted a fairly substantial amount to pay CETA to manage the residential hotline call center for us, and also a fairly substantial amount for ICT services from CETA and our annual software licenses. With regard to expenditure on capital assets, those are the budgets allocated. Members can see that our budget decreases from 13-14 compared to 12-13. The reason for that decrease is that during 12-13 we were focused on purchasing IT infrastructure so that we could have our own independent IT infrastructure separate from the presidency's IT infrastructure. Up until now, we've been using the presidency's IT infrastructure, but we now have completed buying all our own IT infrastructure, and we now have our own IT, our own independent IT system. And that was our main expenditure here during this financial year. We will continue with ongoing capital expenditure, but it's not nearly as substantial as the amounts that we're required to put in place our own IT infrastructure in the current financial year. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Members. Can you note here, Honorable Slats, Honorable Dr. Fendik? Okay.
Thank you, dear. Thank you to Dr. Phillips for the presentation. You know, you're all studying rural municipalities, and you said that you've got 10 municipalities, but you are piloting at this stage, and you obviously have to develop your human systems and procedures, etc. You know, once these are fully developed, is it not possible to use the system of peer reviews, you know, like using the impact system? You know, for municipalities so that we can, you know, spread the M&E systems to municipalities maybe quicker than what we, you know, what we can do with your limitations based on your value.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let's go to the very first page of the presentation. On page one, Chairperson, it has been said, the background at the bottom of this page, the colorful background, that this department is busy with government-wide monitoring and evaluations, performance assessments, transparency evaluations, monitoring programs. Now, this is very broadly spoken issues. You know, what it says, What it is actually saying, you know, in the background, it says that, you know, we are doing this, we are doing that, we are here, we are there, we are actually all over, we're monitoring everything. Now, Chairperson, what I would like to know, you know, to exercise this enormous responsibility, this is a huge, huge task. The department needs to know the ins and outs of all the departments, all national departments, government-wide. They need to know the policy of all departments, the goals of all departments, the visions, how the policy fits into departmental plans, the cooperation between departments, links, whether all appropriations, the budget programs and items are linked to the MDF goals. And it has also been said now that local government will be part now of monitoring as well. This is absolutely, it's an enormous responsibility. Now, taking into account that it's young department and taking their budget into account, my question is, are you satisfied? Is the department satisfied that the department can exercise this responsibility effectively? Not even now, but in the very close future. And going ahead. And secondly, when the department experienced problems, recurrent or whatever, with one of their customers, where they would steer of going, what is the end result? You know, what they crack the work, what is the end result for the action taken? Instead of just saying we monitor this, we monitor the deteriorations, we monitor evenly for the deliver, etc. At the end of the day, something must happen, you know, if one of their customers don't comply with all the decisions, what at the end of the day, what can the department say? We manage to exercise this, and at the end of the day, this is our end result. You know, I just want to get clarity on the impact. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. For me, I've got two questions. The one is the citizen-based monitoring. You know, through legislation, we've already got your CPS, ward committee, hospital boards, etc. established. I don't know if the department has any plans to start creating strategic linkages with those particular organs of people's power, which were able to assist. Of course, there will be individuals in communities that will want to interact with you, but how do you harness the energy of those bodies that are already established? And then, I realize the enormity of the task to look at your medium-term strategic framework, but I don't know if there's any chance of being able to see the work that you could do from the 14 to the 19 would be able to be done in such a manner to feed into this year's budget cycle, because you basically will lose a year if only it gets implemented next year. Thanks.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. Just to follow. This environment, sir. I just want to make a follow up on the question from Honourable Van Dijk. In the slide, I think slide 4, when the DG was talking about the custodianship, indicating CBS DEPSA, the role of DEPSA and so on, and coming to the department custodianship with respect to the monitoring and evaluation. Just a follow-up on that particular question is, you know, there has always been that discussion about what was referred to as a result book. Now, in the what is the basic for the department to have an authority holding arrangement in the absence of the result bill, because I think the issue is going to be the enforcement, the enforcing aspect of it. So if there is no teeth for the department to be able to implement, what's going to happen? Is there anything, any thinking beyond or as a holding arrangement in the absence of the results bill that would enable the department to have the teeth to be able to say this is what you need to implement and therefore goes. Maybe if you, the DG, can speak to that. Then I heard about the CETA going back to manage in terms of the hotline. Now I was just thinking aloud, maybe the DG can explain. Do you find capacity exists within CETA itself to be able to manage it? in the last while, Eno interaction with the Sita in a different department. It's a problem that the capacity doesn't exist, but the whole debate around gatekeeping with respect to IT becomes an important thing for Sita. So in this case, are you satisfied in terms of that particular capacity that there is a such a capacity? I was just thinking, Chair, with respect to the pilot, local government pilot, and also comparing that with the caping of posts, and later the video says it will hamper the functionality of the department in terms of the monitoring or the footprint. It will be negative, affect the footprint in a negative way. Now, caping is not explained. What level is this caping that you're speaking about? It's really just a quick shorthand. If you can explain what that means. Now, yes, we understand the global challenges in terms of the economy. But if within the environment and the money that we have, we need to ensure that there is effective and value for money in terms of the monitoring evaluation, then the department becomes key and a full 100% functionality becomes a key, critical. You can't say that you want to have effective monitoring, value for money, and then you end up not filling critical posts, because then you are unable to do it. It becomes run of the mill, mañana, you know, the kind of approach. So I'm just wanting to understand this in terms of that aspect. Because even in a cabinet level, there must be a different thinking. You choose the priority. One of those priorities is this department in terms of ensuring that we deliver service and its effectiveness. So maybe you will comment on that. There was another question that I thought maybe I could ask, but there is delay that you mentioned in slide 15 in terms of waiting for the service. Unclear whether at the moment in terms of the guidelines for evaluation, I think that's what you mentioned. What time frame to complete that process? You're saying the delay was as a result of the DEPSA delaying guidelines to evaluate. It's, I think it's the delaying DEPSA directive in terms of the Public Service Commission resolution in relation to the posting. What is the time frame to complete that task? And the last question, Chair, is this question around unable to fill position but utilizing consultants in your own calculation, because you need them for 6 months, not the entire year. Well, it's well and good. But in your own analysis, in terms of permanent staff versus consultant, what do you see the end and sense to be? The cheapness of it. Which one is it? Because a consultant is a challenge way currently in terms of what expenditure patterns goes. Maybe those are the questions for you. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. It's only on slide 9 that these municipalities. If they can give you some information about the municipalities, and then are there any rural municipalities in the effect, and the current trend of the training of these officials, and then what are you working closely? I know that these, but SOCA, or is it through, I think it's through the municipalities, through the premier's office. If we can have a
need our feedback on some of the questions that have been raised. One of them is the issue of the capacity for the department to deliver research. I think what I hear across is the importance of the department. But the department that is not going to be able to deliver on all these targets that it has said because of the lack of the capacity. I know that previously the PC has said you're doing this work with collaboration with other people, other departments. But this is not important for the department itself to work at full capacity. When you look at the kind of responsibilities that you have. Before you think about the quote-unquote collaborating with other people, but you yourself have that capacity. And really, to us as members, it's clear that the issue of capacity is a serious one. Now, you say last year the focus had been on the evaluations. I don't know. How many evaluations was that last year? What? I don't know. But where were these results of these evaluations? And perhaps I think it would also be interesting to see the feedback of those evaluations so that as a committee you can be able to say this is where the department was at a particular time and this is where it is. I don't have the copy of the evaluations in front of me now that I saw, but the last evaluation that I saw, it really left very much to be desired in terms of department taking responsibility for certain things, or your HR, or your a whole range of things that were flat in that report. I don't know if you have that, for instance, it would be nice if we can see there what we can see, but we will not see what is the cause of the response from your side. And perhaps the department, the improvement working on that. In terms of your ATT, you're putting a number of evaluation and as I say that the issue is the feedback of those evaluations, and because we think that issues of evaluation is an important one. You spoke about you spoke about the balance between policy development and implementation. I'm sure everyone agrees with you. But perhaps with this to what extent is the process of evaluation going to assist the department in terms of improving on implementation? The other thing that you say you have developed, a set of good management standards. I'm not sure if we saw that, but if you gave them to us, I'm not sure. I've not read them. But I don't remember. I could be guilty of not reading something that we have been given. Don't say that. Making me guilty. I don't remember. Okay. You asked for the budget increase. You know, you remember that last year, during the LPDS adjustment, you adjust up to adjust the government. Now you're asking for budget increase now. Where are you going to get the capacity now to spend this budget? Because I think that whenever we have as this copies of the third quarter report, any of this third quarter of this report that we get, that many of the departments they say that now they couldn't do this because of lack of capacity of a human resource capacity. Right? That's why do we don't say they have a capacity of the personnel when finally pools are not what we call the fields? You know? I think that we would understand if those pools, what they can call, were not funded. They are funded, but they are not filled. So, the issue is why we're not feeding them. The evaluation. You see, we need to declare my own ignorance up front. Last year, I don't know whether this evaluation, which is done internally and externally, I don't know what is done internally. I thought that it was departments were allowed to evaluate themselves. I could be wrong. But then when is an internal and external evaluation? So if I know if I'm right now, I'm talking what I really want to ask. If it is an internal, what we call a situation where the department itself has been asked, it's still a wonderful report. But now here, we're talking about external, what we call the evaluation, which is a good thing. The teaching, you spoke about the internal audits. Evaluated it and you found that no, maybe it is better, it would be better to absorb it than to have it internally. And then you want consultants for that. It is the best way. I think the strategy has been raised. Was it the best thing to Honorable Sagana? Was it the best way to outsource it? Rather than, in some cases, I know the Municipal Finance Management Act, it talks, for instance, about sharing of an internal audit system between the departments. But clearly, give it to consultants. You know, we have an attitude towards consultants. You know, we know that you will have consultants, but the issue is really, should we avoid employee consultants where we can internally improve what we call the yes. Well, it can avoid because to me the internal audit, Honorable Ramachandra, I think that's an ongoing thing, looking at the risk of because of the department throughout the existence of the department. Now, I wish I could be that consultant, you know, I would be fine, because there's a lot of work for this consultant, because you need to. Yeah, it could sustain you. My department could really sustain you. Why don't we have our own build, our own capacity in terms of this? I thought the last one. Well, I mean, from that the eighth evaluation was started. One final report approved. I think that the last one, is around the Amicia packet. I think it's good to have Amicia packet. But maybe some of us are afraid to, when people say tomorrow you failed. You said you do so much, you failed. When you have achieved a lot, you know, but could not what you call it, achieve the overall that you had set yourself. I don't know when ambitious, too ambitious. Because I'm looking at the number of things that you really need to be doing as department. And the whole thing, when I look at this number of targets that you set in here, revolves also around the capacity of the department to do this. Okay. If there is no addition, maybe there will be around to let our department to support.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you all for your I'll start by responding and then ask my colleagues if they would like to add. Perhaps if I can start with trying to answer two questions raised about this, about the end results of our monitoring work. This question, so what question, we produce information and then what happens, and that also was related to the question about the results goal and what is envisaged and enforcement. We have to work within the current legal framework of government. In terms of laws passed by Parliament, the most important one is perhaps one in terms of enforcement in this regard is the Public Service Act, but also the DFMA. And that legislative framework makes it clear that there is a system of enforcement and discipline within the public service. In terms of which, it's clear that there are systems and processes to hold public servants accountable for performance, which range from taking actions such as helping public servants develop their capacity, to actions such as disciplinary action or dismissal for gross non-performance. And the system which is in place involves, and as we know, supervisors having to take action against officials, heads of department taking action against supervisors who don't act against poor performance, and eventually EAs taking action against the department and officials. So that is the existing legal system that we have, which we must work within until the legal system changes. And we are working within that system, but we don't just produce information. We do more than produce information. We're actively working with both departments and the executive to try and ensure that the information is acted upon. So we take all of our key monitoring reports regularly to Cabinet, to the Provincial Executive Council, to the President's Coordinating Council, and we would like to increasingly bring our monitoring and evaluation results to Parliament as well, to provide Parliament with information so that Parliament can also call departments to ask departments what is being done to address issues and what improvement plans are being put in place. That leads to the question as to, well, are we then looking at changes to the existing legal framework to over and above what is already there in terms of the DFMA and the Public Service Act to perhaps have other forms of enforcement as well? We are looking at that. It's a very complicated issue. If we were to change that legal framework to the existing legal framework, it might require changes to the Public Service Act and DFMA, in addition to putting in place new legislation. Our minister has also made the point
previously, but as a new department, we need to be careful to spend some time establishing M&E processes in government and forecasting them in concrete and law. We need to spend some time testing changes and refining them in forecasting them in law. We have now been going to the department for 3 years, and we are becoming more settled now in the processes, etc., and we will now be putting more focus on this issue of an appropriate legislative framework for monitoring and evaluation. We will be working on it this year with a view to producing a document which will stimulate discussions with the government about the possibilities of this part. With regard to our monitoring of municipalities, what we are focusing on initially is to do assessments of municipalities which are very similar to the assessments that we've been doing with the management practices in national and provincial government departments. That's our primary focus, I described briefly the process that we go through with national and provincial departments, where we facilitate the self-assessment by the top management of the quality of the management practices against management status. And we then moderate it, and we then encourage them to put in place improved plans. We want to do the same with municipalities, start pilots with our pilot municipalities initially, but then in time focusing particularly on the weakest municipalities. So it would be a very similar process to the assessments of national provincial departments. The key difference is that in the municipal assessment tool, we've also introduced indicators for basic service delivery, refuse removal, water service delivery, sanitation and roads that happen at municipal level, the quality of the management of those basic services, in addition to the generic management practices that we assess for national and provincial departments. We will, as we start carrying out those assessments of municipalities, we will make the results public, as we've been doing with the national and provincial NCAT results. And we would therefore like to see that kind of peer review mechanism that you talked about to try and increase accountability with regard to management practices in municipalities, and also with the need to try and get use peer group pressure amongst municipalities to result in improvements. We have, with regard to national and provincial assessments of management practices, we are also working with Treasury and DPSA, and we've developed a number of case studies of good management practices. When we've been doing the assessments in all of the management areas that we've been assessing, we found at least some departments which are doing very well. And we've drawn up case studies of those involved in departments are doing very well. We're organizing workshops with officials to provinces and at national level to provide exposure to officials to the case studies of good practice. And we will do the same at municipal level as well. So it's not just an external monitoring for the sake of identifying weaknesses. There's also a strong element of providing support and information to enable learning and to enable the weaker municipalities and weaker departments to learn from the better performing ones. I think one general comment which I'd like to make, Chairperson, is that with all the programs that we're doing, we are aware of a dilemma between, on the one hand, being external monitors, and on the other hand, wanting to build the capacity of departments to do monitoring themselves. All the managers should do monitoring. Any manager, any department who's managing any program should monitor their program. They should be has set a baseline for various indicators and targets that they try to achieve with their program, and they should regularly monitor whether or not they're achieving their targets. And they should be thinking about how can they do things differently and better in order to improve performance of their programs. In our custodian role for M&E, our ultimate goal is for all departments to be very good at doing M&E themselves. And that will reduce the need for external monitoring evaluation by others. We're trying to work towards a situation where management practices in government change, where managers themselves use ME tools themselves to improve the performance of their own programs much more than they're doing so now, where they collect a lot more data on the impacts and outcomes of their programs than they're doing now, and they use that data to inform improvements to their programs. So with all the programs that we're trying to achieve a balance between these two, and we've designed in such a way that as far as possible when we implement them, through the implementation we build the capacity of the partners to do the ME themselves. That's why, for example, with delivery agreements for outcomes, it's the coordinating ministers and departments which themselves report on progress. We do provide independent assessments as well, independent in the sense of DPME. But it's very important that the departments own the delivery agreements and that they own the reporting against delivery agreements as opposed to having someone else report for them. Similarly, with the management performance assessments that we're doing, the most important part of that is self-assessment by the leadership of the department itself, so that they don't just see this as an exercise by external people monitoring them to identify their weaknesses. They see it as a useful tool, as a useful practice for them to check themselves against standards, so that they can get into a continuous improvement. And similarly with frontline service delivery monitoring, we've been very careful to work together with the department. So if we visit the police station and we find that there's problems, severe problems with regard to customer service or with regard to cleanliness or maintenance at the police station, we engage very strongly with both the management at the police station, but also with the regional and national management of SACS. And we try to engage with them to say, what are the underlying causes of these problems at the individual police station, and what can you do at the regional or national level to address those underlying problems. And also, we are constantly saying to departments, do see that this is useful. Through this frontline service delivery monitoring, we've identified problems that have enabled you to improve. Do see that it's useful, and we encourage the departments to do such monitoring themselves, as opposed to monitoring just being an external function done by an external body like DPME. In all of these areas, we try to work towards a situation where departments do the ME themselves, because in the long run, that will be the sustainable way in which we improve performance of the service delivery and the public service. The managers themselves start being concerned about continuously improving and monitoring their own work, collecting data on their own work and using that to inform improvement. There was one question about our APP seems to be very comprehensive and seems to be monitoring everything. I think we have tried to be strategic in deciding what we're going to monitor. We aren't actually monitoring everything. It would be possible for us to monitor everything. We've been strategic in the sense that if you look at our main areas of work, the first main area is producing delivery agreements for the 12 key outcomes and then monitoring their implementation. Those 12 key outcomes and the delivery agreements don't cover all of government's work, and they deliberately don't cover all of government's work. They're deliberately not comprehensive because they rather, through the delivery agreements and their outcomes, we're trying to focus on the most important things that government really needs to focus on to achieve results in key areas like job creation, basic education, reducing crime, rural development, etc. We're definitely not monitoring everything with our monitoring of the delivery agreements, because they're not comprehensive. There's a lot of work which departments do, which are not included in the delivery agreements, which are covered by their own departmental strategic plans and APPs. And we're not focusing on monitoring of that. In addition, as I said, the reason why we chose to focus on management practices, the quality of management practices, and to put lots of effort into monitoring that, is because of the strategic analysis that one of government's key challenges is to improve its implementation capacity. In terms of policy developments, governments perform quite well with test practice capacity, and key value is implementation capacity. Implementation capacity is about management practices in departments. So we have thought carefully about what in particular we should focus on monitoring in order to try and have big impacts, knowing very well that we can't monitor everything, that it would be impossible. Similarly, with our frontline service delivery monitoring program, we know one of the key challenges of government is the quality of service delivery on the ground. And that's why we particularly chose to focus on that aspect of government's work. terms of our budget allocations, so we do think that we have the capacity and enough money to achieve the targets that we put in this ADP. We would have liked to have more money, we would like to have more capacity, particularly for monitoring municipalities, but for the targets that we put in this ADP, we do have sufficient capacity and money. We have still been ambitious with our targets in this ADP, but we've also tried to be realistic. So we've tried to be more realistic than previously, but to retain the ambition. There was a question with regard to the use of existing structures for community-based monitoring. The answer is yes. I think it will vary from community to community, where the community has citizen-based monitoring is put in place. But for example, with the FPS, it's very likely that we'll be working with community police forums and existing structures that are in place, and helping those structures to put in place formalized ways of monitoring quality of service delivery in their local police stations. There was a question about inclusion of some aspects of the National Development Plan in the current ADPs. The Secretary of the National Planning Commission has particularly been focusing on talking to departments about that, and I think if you review the ADPs that have recently been put before Parliament, you will find in many instances that they've been influenced by the National Development Plan, and there are already some key activities from the National Development in this current year's ADPs. So yes, we agree with that. But what we're trying to do with the NDSF is mesh the NDP into government's existing planning cycle. Because the NDP has come at a certain time, but there is an existing planning cycle which is linked to the electoral cycle. So, and that's the 5-year, as you know, the 5-year strategic planning within the APP process. So it's important for the NDP to be implemented thoroughly and effectively, or to be systematically meshed into the planning cycle, and that's what we're trying to do with the NDSF. But in the meantime, we are encouraging departments to put as much as they can, the NDP, we encourage departments to do it as much as they can in the current NDP in the meantime. There was a question as to whether or not we think the CEF has the capacity to manage the hotline. When we took over the management of the hotline from the presidency, much of it was already being managed by CEFA, the call center. What we focused on is working with CEFA to improve their performance. They just have dedicated capacity in place of the presidential hotline. They have increased their capacity on our request to manage driver services related to the presidential hotline. We have put a lot of effort into managing CEFA closely, but their performance has improved over the last 2 years. So we think that now they do have sufficient capacity to provide the service, but we do still manage them closely as well. We have a service-level agreement with CEFA, which we monitor, and we intervene when there's problems with the service provided by CEFA. Requesting us to explain the capping of the personnel budget. What this means is that cabinet has said that personnel budgets must remain as they are in the NTF allocation. And for example, departments can't just move, if they're underspending in other areas, they can't move more money to personnel. This is in the light of the fact that personal expenditure and the percentage of total government expenditure has been increasing quite markedly. As I mentioned in the presentation, we did put in a request, especially a motivated request, to the budgeting process for additional funding. We did get a bit more funding. As members will be aware, we're not the only departments who have not obtained the funding that we asked for. There are many departments in the current budget fiscal situation which we didn't obtain the increases that they asked for. And there was a question about the point in the presentation that we made that we had to delay a few of our medium level positions due to the due to awaiting the DVA directive on the implementation of the bargaining chamber agreement with regard to levels 9, 10 and 11, 12. That hasn't been resolved. DVA has issued the necessary directive and we've either held or in the process of filling those positions now. With regard to the question about the relative costs and benefits of using our own staff or service providers, I think in principle we do prefer to use our own staff wherever possible. We prefer to use service providers where we think it's more cost effective to use service providers than our own staff. So we did do a cost calculation with regard to the internal order function and we did think because as a small we did come to the result that we shared with our audit committee that because we're a small department we wouldn't keep the highly skilled internal audit capacity that would be required on our staff. We wouldn't be able to keep them busy for the whole year and it's more cost effective to hire a firm, an audit firm to provide that function for a few months than to have the staff on our payroll for a whole year. You do make a good point, that person, that it might become effective if we could share those staff with other departments. Perhaps we can explore that with presidency. There was a question with regards to the municipalities that we're piloting the application of the municipal assessment tool with. I don't have that information on hand, but we'll provide it to the committee. We have, by the way, Chairperson, the standards are available on our website. They are publicly available, the management assessment standards. We would welcome an opportunity to again present the committee on the management assessment standards for provincial departments. As I said, we've completed them for all 156 national provincial departments in 12-13. We will be taking the results to that in June. So I would propose that perhaps the committee could invite us to present those results of the MPAT assessment perhaps in July, the committee. We are engaging with the pilot municipalities. We started the process of carrying out municipal assessments for those pilot ones. When we provide the committee with the list of the municipalities that we're working with, we'll also provide our time frames for those pilot assessments of the municipalities. At the moment, the focus is on with municipalities is on carrying out the assessment to establish a baseline for management practices in these municipalities and their service delivery. The focus is not on training with regard to the municipal assessments. Yes. With regard to the question on evaluations, our evaluation system and program is fairly new. We developed the evaluation policy framework and we had it approved by CAMPUS in November 2011. In the 12-13 financial year, we initiated 80 evaluations together with other departments. Some of them are now nearing between 8 of key programs together with other departments. Some of them are nearing completion. We will provide you with them with all of them as they're completed because as part of the national evaluation policy, CAMPUS agreed results of all evaluations must be made public. We will put them on our website and we will also welcome the opportunity present them to this committee, but also to be invited by the committees responsible for those departments, together with those departments to present the results of the evaluation. So the committees can ask the departments for information about the improvement plans that they're putting in place to address the issues raised in evaluations. We in terms of the National Evaluation Plan, which is on our website, we are also initiating 15 evaluations in this current new financial year. So We started 8 last year, many of which are coming on now, being completed, and we'll be starting another 15 this financial year. The correct chairperson is that so far we completed one, but you will see that there will be a range of other evaluations becoming available now. There was a question about also related to evaluations with regard to departments evaluating themselves versus external evaluations. In terms of the National Evaluation Policy Framework, all departments are encouraged to periodically evaluate their major programs. They should. It relates to what I was saying earlier about good managers doing M&E themselves. All departments should regularly or periodically evaluate whether or not they're achieving the impact they intend to achieve with their programs. What we're doing with the National Evaluation Plan, though, is asking Cabinet to agree on certain key or strategic evaluations, which we do in conjunction with the departments. The departments will be doing a range of other evaluations themselves, but there's certain key ones which Cabinet agree on, which we do together with the departments, which form part of their National Evaluation Plan, which are made public and for which the results get reported to Cabinet. There's a requirement that the results get reported to Cabinet. For both the evaluations which we do together with departments and the evaluations that departments do themselves, it's good practice for them to employ external evaluators. Just in terms of international good practice on evaluation, it's better to employ external evaluators so that you can have to try and ensure that the evaluations are objective.
Before you maybe go for another
question, how many departments that work in M&T that I think they use that's about it.
I don't know offhand, but almost all departments have M&E units. And we know all the provinces have quite strong M&E units in the Premier's offices as well that we're working closely with. The key challenge we find in departments is not so much that they don't have an M&E unit, that almost all of them have M&E units, and the people in the M&E units departments are normally quite knowledgeable about M&E. The problem lies more with other managers in the departments. And the other people in the departments who are managing programs, they should be monitoring and evaluating their own programs. They shouldn't rely on the M&E units in the department to do the monitoring and evaluation for them. That's part of the problem. We need to develop a culture where all managers do M&E themselves. It's a basic management function.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What do you think?
Can I ask colleagues to add to this if they would like to?
Who's coming in? I forgot to welcome the lady, the one who's coming in. I don't know what committee has met. ICT, is it ICT? I don't think that the committee has met. You're welcome. And I think there are questions around the data part or not to understand. I'm not seeing you come. You want to come in now or should we allow for Edison? Good afternoon. And welcome. So there are no issues between
Honorable Janet.
Okay, just, I just want to start with something as to exactly how many data is post-premier in this country. in the last financial year they reached 25. So what's happening to that 25? Has it been changed?
Madam Ramadan, you want to add to this question?
No, it's a simple
question. But I just add something that in the new what called structure, how many do you intend to feed it after? Madam Ramadan.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to ask Gigi to explain. One of the, what we are considering today is a department as the TD plan and what the department is going to buy with the money they're going to get. It then means that we would also have to do oversight whether what has been said in the strategic plan, annual performance plan, would be realized. As this committee, like any other committee with that particular focus, we would then have to say you are not meeting the target or not, or you are meeting the target. I just want to ask you a general question in relation to your document here that I'm giving, the annual performance plan 13 to 14. I see that the target, the measurability suggested in percentage terms. Now, I'm asking, how are you going to be able to say to you that you are not delivering, or you are delivering, given what you have written as a target? My difficulty with this is the degree of measurability of it. I see that it's very slippery, in my view, very slippery target that has been set. Now, for an example, in there is something that says we're targeting 60% or 40%. But if you read further to see what's the baseline for that target in terms of the tangibility, the tangibles, I don't find. So I just want to understand how we're going to be able to do an oversight function. The second question is also to that, is just that I need to understand. On page 58, I think, there is something about the question I asked you. 58 and 68, there seems to be fighting columns with regard to DEPSA. The DEPSA, you said by the 1st of April, you would be able to do the guidelines. This is now to deal with the guidelines of assessing the head of department. On 58, you say 1st of April. On page 68, on the same issue, you say end of April. So I'm just trying to check that you've got two time frames in terms of that same issue. Now, if you say on page 64 that you're targeting 13-14 department as 60% of the department, one can guess if the department at 38, what that is. But my question is, which of these departments has already been identified? Have you identified which of the 38 departments you identified in order to get this? And just to understand what the informing criteria for that was, those departments have already been identified. You may not have, I must say, qualified this. You may not have that details right here. But I would like us to understand, if you say 80% of provincial departments in the same column, one suspects that there would be a little bit of homework that has been done with respect to that in terms of which of the focus provinces and the department informed by X we're going to be paying attention to. Now, I did say I'm asking a general question, because if you look at the sub-programs in terms of even the president, if you look at in terms of the tangibility of what we can hold you account to, it is in the very broad terms, One may say maybe because you don't know how many complaints you could get in the years that you're facing, but there is a yardstick, there is a some degree of yardstick that you could compare to in order to be able to see whether you're meeting the target or not. So I'm sorry that I'm deviating, but I'm asking a question on the annual performance plan, which is what we would need to hold you to account on accountability to. So I can go on, but maybe let me stop there. Just general question in terms of how are we going to hold you to the target that you set in yourself, rather than using the kind of percentage, which is really something that for me is very, it will move depending where you start your percentage from. I don't know where you're starting from. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you very much.
Is it possible for the department to table before the committee the improvement plan that was submitted to the auditor general? Because if you can do that, it would be easy for us when we are conducting oversight and focus on the areas of improvement that are in there. And to add on my previous question, how many how many internal auditors do you plan to employ in the current year?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. Sorry, I was late. I was at Scopa. But just linking on the question of Honorable Yenge with regard to the Auditor General, since you mentioned the Auditor General, to what extent has there been consultation with the Office of the Auditor General in you drawing up your strategic plan for the coming two or three years? I ask this question, Chairperson, because we know that the AG office focuses more on regularity audits, and a few performance audits have been conducted, which were very, very useful. Performance on use of consultants, Avalon coaching, etc., etc. But they don't have the capacity to deal with all of these issues, financial or human resources or financial capacities. And I'm wondering to what extent is there some dovetailing and talking to each other to see whether particular monitoring, evaluation, and performance audits can be conducted in certain circumstances. There is here on page 58 facilitation of HOD assessments. To what extent is DPM involved in the assessments of members of the executive ministers? Because we know there's an agreement signed between the president and the ministers. To what extent are you involved? Is it somebody else involved? Because we like to ask them questions. Last question is, in the last meeting and this meeting here, there have been a lot of assessments done with regard to SATs, of what they do and what they don't. It's very useful. In the education sector, how much of emphasis has been placed by DPME in monitoring what's happening in respect of schools? You know, the facilities of schools, libraries, sanitation facilities, laboratories, etc., etc. Is there any emphasis on that area in consultation with it? Thank you.
What I'm asking is when you look at issues like labor services, I know that under the authority of different spheres of government. But if you on this community-based monitoring, I can say it's an issue that causes concern, and how, what influence does this have on the view of budget and the relationship between the department and other departments, in the sense that an issue will appear maybe many times, it does come up, but it causes concern that you will complain about lack of lack of this resource, lack of this. Is it because maybe you still don't have any tool to guide to follow up on those issues, like why is this issue has been repeated so many times but still comes on the agenda and is still being considered for being given resources by the National Treasury or the collaboration there, I think, might be more stronger. And if you can enlighten us on what influence you might have on issues where we know that there haven't been any delivery of issues like library, as you said, library is not the same issue that affects everybody. What can we do to make sure that there's improvement, maybe on an immediate issue, or what response do you get when you write such issues to the department?
It's not from the president's side, really, but the problem, I think,
the department teams, they tell him that we can do this, or we are almost there, we are going to build the 50 schools, we are going to, at the end of the financial year, even long before, you see that this is not possible. And we know as a teacher there, and yourself, during this evaluation and monitoring going around, what is that you do to say, Mr. President, we think that this one must not go, or this one is not going to start, or let's say, let's put it differently so that people should not accept an answer in the coming financial year.
I put it to the question of the department is not there because I understand.
Thank you, sir. Just one question, Edwin. I believe mention was made of the results still, and you are putting that aside for a while now. Do I take it that the understanding between departments is maturing in terms of the role of DTME vis-a-vis the role of other departments? Because intentionally, I think the results still was going to be used as a hammer and stick approach or a carrot and stick approach, where you would say we're forcing it to the A, B, and C. And now there is this great understanding, and if I'm right in that, then I'd like to know. And I don't know if I misheard, or there was something about a municipal assessment. Was it a bill? Not a bill. It's a universal management. I know about that too, right? But I yeah. How is a cooperation? I mean, to what extent is the DPME received by these other spheres of government and departments when you go out there? Is there reluctance, is there willingness, is there understanding that yes, we need to work together for the betterment of the country and sustainability and that kind of thing?
The CFO is opening the flower, I think, by the financial person today. I can't do that, CFO. And I'll find your question. No, she's not there, but I think.
She
Now the question that I want to put to Vinci, on page 11, I'm sure the chair for now we can hear his voice. Something that CFO we don't understand. I think I've done that. So we don't understand exactly whether certification or what part. How do you draw up this figure? Because we just have to end together, something that we don't understand. The other question, you know, is the DG, I'm really worried about this in Italy and abroad. The same happened 6 months. The ADP says it will happen for them. So it's more than 6 months. Quarterly is more than. There will be a quarterly report. However, throughout the year, it will happen. So, I hope that do you feel that you do need to have real capacity there, or still open to build on what you call it. In fact, with clear recommendation from ourselves that you build your own capacity if this is to happen, it is to happen. You also indicated that the targets are ambitious but realistic. Otherwise, with the possibility of achieving them. Last year, you did 8 evaluations, and only one was completed. And now we're going to 15. We haven't completed the other 8.
Okay, then and I think if that is the correct answer from the young man, I think then that is well, I will withdraw my question, Honorable Swart. The other issue that is concerning me in the ABT is that is alignment. Isn't it your responsibility, something that you have capacity to do, aligning the ABT to deliver what you call an agreement? because it says that you are going to do that. I think that it would be useful then to and it looks like this is going to be done for that. And so we have access to those reports. And the report is envisaging a lot of reports around them. 33 letters on alignment. And just trying to quickly look at your national estimate in terms of how many sub-components, you know, that we can be able to do this work. I think we should have the RDP. I rest my case.
Not okay, it's a very small question, really. Maybe I'm just adding on my outstanding question, waiting for the reply. But what your column of output in your strategic plan or annual performance plan, most of them, they don't, you don't specify in terms of numbers of what you want to achieve in terms of numbers, so that when you do the quarterly kind of report in terms of based on what you said at the beginning of first column, that quarterly this is how you're going to spread those achievements at the end of the fourth quarter, then you achieve your 100% of what you set as an output in the output column. Do you think it's difficult to have that in that column, if you can explain? And I, for example, if we can look at your page 18 of your page 18 of a strategic plan, a 5-year, 3-year strategic plan document, right? Because I'm reading this interchangeably with the one that is before us, and you look at page 18. You see the performance indicator column. It will say 3 monthly basis how you're going to do the final evaluation. But if you go towards the end, you see 100%, 100%. That's what you're going to be, that you're targeting yourself. This year, 2013, 14 and 15, it's 100%, 100%. Now, it can be 100% of anything that you decide to be called 100%. Because the column the doesn't say it's going to be 8 or it's going to be 20 or it's going to be 100. Therefore, you're going to measure against what you said at the instruction column. Do you think it's a difficult thing to do? Because, I mean, in terms of the MCAP 3-year budget, you already know indicative budget, even if it's not necessarily confirmed, you have an indicative budget for the 3-year. Is it difficult to just give us a sense? So that we are able to ask you a hard question. I know we have a slightly different relationship with you in terms of general monitoring and evaluation, but in this one, that relationship changed in terms of whether you deliver what you say you want to deliver rather than the other one.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the first question of exactly how many funded vacant positions do we have, and the 25 vacant funded positions were vacant at the end of the last financial year, as we indicated in our presentation on page 16 at the top, as of now, all of those positions have either been advertised or in various stages of being filled, in addition to the new vacancies arising from the fact that we now have funding this financial year to fill small posts. I can also point out that the vacancies aren't always static, because like many other departments, there are people leaving the department all the time. So we have new vacancies arriving all the time. Sometimes people get promoted to other departments or they leave the public service. On average, I think we have a turnover rate in government departments of about 5% or so, and ours is the same. So there's it's constantly shifting. As people leave the department, the posts which are vacant. But the short answer to your question is that all posts which were vacant at the end of the last financial year have been advertised in various stages of being filled. And related to that, Chairperson's more question is how many do we intend filling of our structure? And we intend filling all of our structure, all the funded positions we intend to fill. And as we say in the presentation, of the 208 funded posts for the 13-14 financial year, all but two of them so far have been advertised and in various stages have been filled. The other two are only funded from December, and we will be advertising them in July so that they can be filled by the time December comes, by the time the funding is available.
So are you saying to me, can you tell me exactly how much has been signed from the financial year? How many? I understand the latter part of people moving in and out. And 25, you can exactly tell me how much of that 25? Given how many out of that 25 have been filled to date? Except the advent, just to say, 10 out of 25
have been filled. Chairperson, can I ask our head of anything to earn her airfare? Thank you, Chairperson. Of the 25, 6 have been filled, and 2 assume duty next month. 6 have been filled today, and 2 will be assuming duty next month.
So by the end of the financial year, at least that 25 from the last financial year will be done. You promise?
That is the intention. 25, yes. But
why are the problems? This is the intention. What is the problem in employing? When you ask for money, you ask for money for 25 and your budget, and then in the process, what nature of problems that you encounter for you not to fill in the pool? Because that has an impact on your progress.
In fact, what's worrying us with respect to the discussion, what worries us, the president says to the department, again on the State of the Nation address, department fills in all the funded posts. He's speaking to all the other departments. But in the presidency itself, I think the president should take the lead, because the president has said this must be done. The president should be seen to be taking a lead, to be able to knock on all other departments to say, what are you doing about this?
the region alluded, I mean, in his presentation, some of the reasons that we experience in terms of filling the positions is our normal turnover rate. So in terms of when we fill positions, so say for example you fill five, you have five people who are more or less leaving. So there will be that attrition rate in the department. Beyond that, also in terms of we have to conduct compulsory pre-employment screening in terms of our candidates. So before we can appoint these candidates, those screening results have to be obtained before these candidates can be appointed in department. The challenge in the public service is that we experience that the turnaround time to get these results is taking about plus minus 2 to 3 months. We have engaged with GPSA on this matter, and it's an ongoing challenge in the public service. With respect to the other issue, it has been resolved. The directive implemented the PSCBC resolution, so that will not be a challenge in the year to come. I think also with regards to filling up positions at the higher level, and I think we raised it at the last meeting as well with our specialist positions, where we are looking for a specific skills in terms of being these positions. The difficulty is trying to recruit these officials. So we will go through a process of interviews. We will even find a candidate, make the offer, then the official declines the offer. So we have had a number of those situations where we have went through the whole process. We went through the interview process, we have made the offers, but the officials, because of their skills that they possess, in high demand in the public service as well as the private sector. But in saying that, I think in this year, as we have indicated, all of our positions for the new financial year have been advertised. So we have already went through the process of even the interviews. So hopefully in going forward, that we will not have this sort of situation at the year end. I also need to mention that in the public service, the general trend in the department is a 10% vacancy rate. If you look at our current rate, it's 12%. With the official that have already assumed duty in the department, it more or less leaves us, I think, around 9-8%. So we are more or less in line with the practice in the public service.
Well,
there's
a good
party.
Okay, so just a comment, it's a comment that you must take into account when you come in the next financial year when we talk about position. I don't really need an answer, but there's a difference between the people who are leaving the department and the people whose goals have been funded. Because if you have your 25 that has been funded, it cannot be confused with the ones who are leaving. Our concern is the money that is within yourself that you have asked for, and you have promised that this is going to work, and it's not working. That is that. And then the others who are leaving and coming, who are not part of this funded post, we will hear from you later on about that. We ask you about what you have told us, and what you have been guided by the salary to do. So, yeah, Chair, I think I will leave it.
The position is that from the beginning of this financial year, you know, you've received more money, of which a portion will go towards new funded positions. So you can only start advertising and working on those now, you know, so I don't understand all these questions.
Chairperson, I think the point is taken is just that when we talk about budget positions, the convention is to talk about all our positions. So the way we report it here is on is about putting in funded posts is all, including new ones and existing ones where there's people going and not going. So that's the way that this information is reported. The information here doesn't only refer to new posts, it refers to all of our posts, because all of our posts are funded, we talk about them as funded posts. So it includes funded posts includes new positions as well as existing positions on the structure. But we can provide more detailed breakdowns of what's happening with the new with the new positions or the positions which have never yet been filled.
Glad to see
you. But then, Chair, you see, now just tell me, I have heard that, and I deliberately say I don't want to enter into it. I was talking about the last financial year. That's what I was talking about. Now, can you tell us how many in total, including the ones from the last today, the positions that are vacant, including the ones that are coming from the financial year and the ones that are from exactly what number, so that when you come here next year, or by the end, towards the end of the year, we know exactly what is that must have from you.
Not to say, I think that I would request you that when you report to us, if reporting about filling of funded vacancies, does not confuse that with people with attrition from the department. It doesn't confuse us. Because all that we want to know is from funded posts, how many vacant posts are there? You say 25, we're taking 25. But if someone is resigning now when you're sitting here from who has been in the system, we would want to, what you call, we would want to ensure that we don't confuse this. I think that it is important to do that.
Okay, so we'll continue, we'll segregate them and we'll report in that way.
Sure.
Just the question about the targets measured in percentage terms. The strategic plan needs to be read in conjunction with the APP. In many instances, there's much more detail in the APP than is given the strategic plan. So, for example, in the specific example of the evaluation proposed and the percentage of the steering committee, the detail of the actual numbers that the percentage will be of is in the APP. It talks about that there's 8 evaluations of this year and 15 and 15 in the out years of the MC. So those percentages would apply to those absolute numbers. We have, as I mentioned in the introduction, we have had a number of engagements with the Auditor General and with auditors appointed by the Auditor General in detail about our forms, information and our targets. And we have put particular effort into making sure that all of our targets in this APP are measurable. I'm confident that they are all measurable. We very carefully looked at all of them and made sure that they're measurable. Knowing that if there are thorough audits done on them, and if any of them, the audit finds that any of them are not measurable, then that's their finding in our audit report. And we set ourselves a target of obtaining a clean audit report against this APP. So perhaps we could engage outside the meeting on detailed ones, but for each of them we do have. For each of the indicators in here, we have an indicator description, which is a detailed description of how we're going to collect the data related to that indicator in order to measure whether or not we've achieved the target that we set ourselves. And those indicator descriptions are also audited by the Auditor General. For some of our targets, for example, the Honourable Member referred to page 64 of the APP. Where we referred to, was it page 64, yes, where we referred to the percentage of national provincial departments is HOD aside off the management performance assessment. And we had the 60% and the 80%. Lots of the work that we're doing is done in collaboration with other departments. So, for example, as I mentioned earlier, these management performance assessments, key part of this is self-assessment that we facilitate the top management of the departments. We set ourselves a target of facilitating the process well enough that at least 60% of national departments will do the self-assessment and sign them off. We obviously can't identify exactly which department that will be up front, but in terms of setting a target, our own performance is measurable because we can show the auditors copies of the sign-offs by the HOD that we collect that evidence, and they can calculate on the number of sign-offs that we have, what percentage that is of the total number of national departments. So, even where there are percentages, we have ensured that they are measurable, and that we will collect the necessary evidence to enable the Auditor General to assess whether or not our reporting against those targets is accurate or not, is based on data. Chairperson, there was a question as whether we can table the improvement plan that we submitted to the Auditor General. Yes, we welcome the opportunity to present that to the committee. There was also a question with regard to how many internal auditors we plan to employ. As I mentioned earlier, we have one full-time internal audit official and a full-time risk official who report to the head of the Office of the Director General. We currently have one firm of internal auditors employed to carry out some of the more sophisticated internal audit work. To answer your question, Chairperson, when I said that they only work for 6 months in the year, I didn't mean 6 months at one time. I meant 6 months in all different times in the year. So they do work across the year, but it's not full time. It adds up to about half a year of a high-level person.
Chair, I just want to with respect to DD, the same column that you are referring to on page 64, you're saying your target for this year is 60% of the departments. If you remember my question, I was asking you, why don't you say there is 100 departments of state in the column that gives us an indicator? And out of that 100, I'm just making an example, you're targeting your target to meet 60% of those that are finding the performance at risk. Now you say it will be up for the when we do the audit, it will be up to the department or the editor general to make, when he counts how many, to get determination of the number. I was not asking the question for AG. I'm asking the question for me and the other members that are going to make sure that you deliver on what you promised in terms of the indicator. So I was asking, is there any reason, for an example, that, or maybe it's a space issue, that you could not write there are 38 departments of which data you're going to achieve 60% of them? That was really the question. So I'm for me, not for anybody else, because I have to measure it based on what you say and you know how many departments. So I'm just having this conversation with you based on your response, that I understand somebody can do the calculation, but in terms of this as an indicator, performance indicator, is any data published, for an example, to write it. I can go through with you in various cases where that has not been contained, it's not been written out. One can guess what that is. We can do the calculation later. Well, so I was asking you that question. Is there difficulty into that? Is there any reason for that? Because I'm actually reading the document that you refer to here. So all I'm just saying, Chair, is that I'm just trying to point out to the to doctor, a good doctor, that we can engage with you on this APP to prove incorrect. But maybe let's not go there. Just ask a simple question. Is there difficulty in you listing out what we all know and then we measure it based on that? That was the essence of my question.
Usually when we choose to use a percentage as a measurement rather than the absolute number, it's because there's a chance that the underlying numbers might change. So, for example, if there are changes to the configuration of government now again, and the numbers of departments, particularly at provincial level, they change. So, in instances where the underlying data might change, we find it's better to use a percentage, because then your measurement remains the same even if the underlying numbers change. But it is still measurable, because we do, as I say, we do know the number of departments during that particular year, at the end of the year, but they might change at the time you're doing the ATD, from the time you do the ATD to implementation.
But what are the facts? What are the facts as we speak today? In that very same call, the facts are there were 38 departments, isn't it? And this is a year, we're talking about a year here, not 3-4 years. So the facts, you can't say you can't write 38 departments here, of which you're going to seek to achieve 60%. I don't understand.
We could write the number of departments, but I'm just saying that where there's a possibility that they might change in time, they're not changing now, but there's a possibility the next year, for example, the Provincial Executive Council might change the configuration. There might be one or two fewer, one or two more provincial departments concurrently, or there might be a change at national level. So just as a matter of practice, we often, where there's a positive indicator might change, we often choose a percentage. But the Honourable Member is right, we could have also put the numbers in it. It's measuring the same thing.
Well, I don't know, Honourable Ramanathan, I understand the PGE to say it doesn't want to say adopted a department two would have been done, but it's putting a percentage, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. Because all that we need to do ourselves, if they say 50% by the end of 2013, 2014, will have been assessed. We should measure them based on that, depending on the number of the, what we call the national departments that are there, and provincial departments. I'm not sure if, and so for provincial departments, I don't know if we, it's not something that we really want to, what we call a follow, but it's important at this stage, of at the beginning, to ensure that a number of people are on board with what we are assigned to achieve. But maybe the question on our government is raising could be clearer if we know from what number are we moving from. So that from that number, then we are able to say 2%, what is 2% of this, or 8% of this, if you know where you're coming from. But if you don't know from where you get this 60%, then it makes it quite difficult. I think that is the point that is referring to, which I agree with him, that we need to know that how many people that we're talking about, so that whatever percentage, that is based on that. I don't know if honourable members there are in the
I understand this question, and indeed this will be until we know the figures, because once we know the figures, we're going to go further and have this document. But I'm not there now. I've asked a question of how many internal officers. We did under TG, but you're sure we're too fast for me. What I want to know, I hear you talking about 6 months, and then why would the case would be employed, and then 6 months, and then they go, I don't know if I present you very well, but what I want to know, how much do you spend on these consultants? Is it more, with that money that you are paying to these consultants, more than the money that you would use if you were paying, let's say, four full-time internal auditors? Is it cheaper to use the consultants to assist one internal auditor than having four or five of them employed to the department? And exactly how much is spent? How much have you spent on these consultants?
I know the
the capex
not growing, it's declining. But we intend to increase the staff complement. I don't know if we don't see a contradiction there. Because we don't want to find a situation where we see your staff territorying and say, we don't have staff there. We're standing there, squatting and in burning office because we don't have. So,
shouldn't we find a balance? Because I think that there was no balance in this. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have an independent audit committee at the department, and they asked us to do calculations of the relevant complement, the cost of employing the internal audit, the full required internal audit skills ourselves versus having one person full-time and managing an outsourced firm to do bits of the work at various periods of time. We did do those cost calculations, and the cost calculations indicated that it's cheaper for us to do it the way that we're doing it now. That's why we decided to do it the way we're doing it now, because it's more cost efficient, it's cheaper. The calculation shows it's cheaper for us to employ the firm to do those more specialized parts of the work. Now again, than to employ, as you've indicated, four or five people on a full-time basis to do it.
Let's talk about the last financial year. Approximately how much did you spend? And how many firms? So is it one firm or is it different firms?
One firm. One firm, and we've got a figure for this financial year, and this ATP is 1.7 million, it's on page 17. Last year they tell me it was 600,000.
Not what?
600,000. Chairperson, there was a question with regard to the extent to which we consulted the Auditor General about our strategic plan and our APP. We don't specifically consult with them about our APP and strategic plan, but we do engage with them frequently and we share our information with them. They're particularly interested, for example, in the results of our management performance assessments, and they are using that to inform some of the areas that they're focusing on as the Office of the Auditor General. We are also obviously very interested in their results at both municipal level and national and provincial level. And we have workshops together where we share data, we make presentations to each other on the results of our monitoring work. There was a question with regard to the extent to which EPME is linked to the assessment of ministers. Chairperson, the President does the assessments of his ministers. He does meet with his ministers. He does have performance-related meetings with his ministers. And our role is to provide the President with data on the performance of the ministers and their departments to inform those meetings.
And what do you base your data that you provide?
We base our data on the results of our various monitoring programs that I've spoken about, on the performance of the departments against the commitments that have been made in terms of the delivery agreements for the various outcomes, the results of the management performance assessment, the results of the frontline service delivery monitoring, and then we also draw other sources of data such as Public Service Commission reports and the Auditor General reports. There was a question with regard to how much emphasis EPME is putting on the monitoring of schools, and particularly school infrastructure. With regard to basic education, we're focusing on the basic education delivery agreement and the achievement of the targets in the delivery agreement, which, as I said earlier, is a strategic view of the key things that need to be done to improve the basic education system. It's deliberately not comprehensive, and it's not looking at all the monitoring of all the schools and the infrastructure in all the schools across the country. That's the Department of Basic Education's job at national provincial level. There are certain key indicators in the delivery agreements for basic education related to that, for example, that there should be full expenditure of provincial education budgets. So that's something that we're monitoring closely and is included in the reports going going to cover this on a quarterly basis. We are also visiting schools as part of our frontline service delivery monitoring program, and we are sharing the results of those visits to schools where we're looking at things like whether or not teachers are arriving on time and are in class for at least 7 hours a day teaching, and the cleanliness of schools and security at schools, etc., as part of our frontline service delivery monitoring program. We're sharing those with the Department of Basic Education with the aim of try and stimulate the Department of Basic Education to do more such monitoring itself at both national and provincial level. With regard to the issue that you raised, Chairperson, about our CapEx declining but our numbers are increasing, CapEx is declining, it looks like it's declining because we had this big temporary increase in CapEx expenditure when we had to put in our own IT infrastructure, because previously we were using the President's IT infrastructure. So there was a big flip or increase in our CapEx spending because of putting in place our new IT infrastructure. And then that's a once-off expenditure, and then that's why it feels like it's going down and then it's steady. There was a question about our role in the preparation of the SONAR. We do provide inputs into the SONAR on a variety of issues. And then the President does ask us to monitor the implementation of certain key aspects of the SONAR. For example, we've been providing the President with reports on the issue of filling of funded vacant posts across government, monitoring that commitment to the SONAR. There was a question as to whether or not there's now a greater understanding of the role of DPME within government. I think, yes, there is. In general, I think after 3 years of operation, the department is much more settled, and we are focusing on the monitoring evaluation initiatives that are in the presentation. And generally speaking, we're having a high level of collaboration with other departments and with the provinces. We're just starting now with municipalities. The fact that we got all the provincial departments this year to participate in the management performance assessments, I think, is a sign of the level of cooperation that we have. And the fact that we're working with all the provinces in terms of putting in evaluation plans, and the fact that we're working with all 9 provinces as well on the frontline service delivery monitoring program is all indications that there is a high level of cooperation. Our key underlying objective, which I spoke about earlier, which is getting all managers in the public service to use monitoring evaluation as a tool to manage their own programs to improve service delivery, is an objective which will take time to achieve. It's about changing the management culture in the public service. We're gradually making headway there, but it's a long-term process to change the public service from one which has a culture continuously doing the same activities over and over again without measuring the impact of those activities and without trying to improve the impact of those activities, one which is much more concerned with measuring the impact and looking for ways to improve impact. There was a question as to whether or not we're still working on with departments to advise them with regard to the alignment of their APPs and delivery agreements. We are still doing that. There is a target for it in the APP. We are doing it with our existing capacity. It's done by the outcomes branch, and we have the specialists in the outcomes branch who focus on various areas such as basic education, health, etc. And they're the people who focus on assessing the APPs to check whether they're aligned with the delivery agreements in addition to their other work. Thank you, Nicholas.
So, if I do get the results, if one of the results, I don't know if it happens to the results.
We can provide you with the results, but in general, we found a high level of alignment between the APPs and the delivery agreements.
Okay, let's hear then other questions. But the public service commission found the strength of what we call the alignment with other departments being 37%. Maybe you should share what you call the notes. You could say that
Thanks, Jeff. I'll answer your question about the table on page 11 of the APP. First, let me apologize for that. That was me making the table a little bit shorter. It's the same as the one that's on page 3 of the E&E. And all we did under current payments or under goods and services, we only highlighted those items that represent significant spending for the department. So if you look at the E&E, the tables for all the expenditure, whereas this one only has four items under goods and services that has significant expenditure. That represents about 70% of the expenditure of the department. So the top part will add up, and if you have current payments, the capital assets will also add up in the total, but goods and services won't add up. I think there were supposed to be indentations there, and the printers may have forgot to put it in.
Thank you very much.
so far, the other lady is edited. She doesn't think that we should approve this budget.
That's what you said. Wow. No, she said that we think that we should approve this budget.
Well, the indication is that the members are heavy. If there are, I don't know, honourable members, if all the questions were responded to, but if the other questions that have been responded to, or the other questions that might arise after you have left, we will make a follow-up on that. But so far, we'd like to say thank you very much.
Thank you, honourable members. Honourable members, Dr. Padet, what's happening tomorrow? G26. I understand that we're going to G26. We're not coming in. G26 behind the house for the third quarter. Now the
yeah.